From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome back, folks. It's Locked On Chiefs, and for the first time this season, we're going to talk about the aftermath of a loss for the Kansas City Chiefs. Glad you're with us today, and glad that we got Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest. How are you, Matt?
Doing okay. It was a late night and a long day, but moving on. Moving on to Houston.
Primetime games are tough, and honestly, the story of today has to be just how many people are broken. I know you got some updates from Andy Reid. What stood out to you in terms of the injury updates?
Yeah, I mean, we really didn't hear a whole lot from Andy Reid either Sunday night or Monday. We're just kind of getting a little bit of information starting to filter out right now. Probably the biggest one to circle, I'd say probably the biggest two to circle, Chris Jones and Anthony Hitchens. Chris Jones, it's a groin injury. The report now is that it's a week-to-week thing. Yeah, Chiefs fans have heard that before, so I know everybody gets nervous when they hear week-to-week. But that is a good sign. I mean, that is an indication that it's nothing that they believe that requires surgery. It's just going to take some time, and that means you've got to give him a chance to heal. And when you say week-to-week, and you've got two games in 10 days coming up, that's probably a tough ask. And with Anthony Hitchens, kind of same kind of thing. We don't really know a whole lot about that injury yet. But the further problem down the road is depth. In that game yesterday, Chiefs at one point, Frank Clark was out with an injury. He was kind of dinged up for a few plays, and they were literally down to four healthy defensive linemen on the field. Colin Saunders, who hasn't played all year, got pressed into duty for 33 snaps. That was more than they ever wanted to ask of him at this point right now in the season. So they've got some issues. And then you flip over on the offensive side of the ball and you got Andrew Wiley. Looks like an ankle sprain there. He will probably miss a game or two. Once again, I would think that with that 10-game turnaround, that's probably maybe a two-game situation, depending on how things play out. You're hoping that at some point, if you're the Chiefs, you're going to get some guys back. But right now, they've got serious injury issues across the board.
I don't know where to start. I mean, probably the one that I thought was the most serious when I saw it was Wiley, but he did avoid the fracture, right? It is just a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, and actually what I was told this morning that it wasn't even a high ankle issue, that they really think I think people hate the term lower ankle sprain because I'm not sure that exists. I think people use it instead of using the term high ankle because high ankle is bad. But no, it did not appear to be that case. I talked to him very briefly in the locker room after the game, and he seemed in relatively good spirits. He was obviously worn out and in some pain. So, it's definitely going to affect him for a little bit. But it does not appear to be at this point a long-term issue. We'll see if there's a surprise in the MRI, but right now they're not expecting anything like that.
Well, and his departure, I think, was probably of the replacements, I think the most glaring. Nothing against Ryan Hunter. I just don't think he's ready. I do feel he's still a developmental candidate. Do you feel like that, or do you think that they're going to ride with him?
Yeah, I mean, right now, if Andrew Wiley is out, he is your best option. I mean, if there's a crazy scenario where Eric Fisher is ready to come back, then you'd have the luxury of plugging him back in at left tackle and moving Cam Irving over. I can't imagine that Eric Fisher is ready to come back at this point. So, yeah, I mean, of their options right now, I think they have the most confidence in Ryan Hunter. But as a result, that leaves you with two backups starting on that left side of the line. And so far, the Chiefs have not really seemed to have a pretty effective plan at giving some help on that side. You got to think that's going to change going forward. I mean, if you've got two guys there that are backups playing in those positions, you saw the pressure that Mahomes faced the last couple of games, and especially against the Colts Sunday night. I think you got to start turning around to figure out how you can give those guys help over there.
Well, let's hope so, because that would make sense. We certainly didn't see them adjust last night in any significant fashion. And I got to ask you if this doesn't open up the prospect of bringing Jeff Allen back, because I got to feel that he's a better option in there at left guard right now today than Ryan Hunter is. And then secondarily, I know that Rankin played some guard at his rookie season as well. Is that an option, or do you still feel that Hunter, in your opinion, is the best?
Well, I'm not sure what I think is the best. I think that right now with the guys on the team, I mean, the fact that Hunter was their active interior lineman guy, that's says a lot right there. Now, some of that certainly is the fact that they feel like that, you know, if they had to throw him in anywhere on the interior, they could. But they could go a lot of different directions. I mean, Allegretti is an option. I mean, he can play. He really is more of a guard type player based on college. So that's an option. You're right. Rankin's playing some guard too. They've got some different directions to go. But just the fact that they had been rolling with Hunter as their backup guard at this point tells you that he's first in line. That doesn't mean he's going to play next week and be the starter. But he right now looks like the first man up.
Well, when we get back, folks, we're going to go deeper into the other side of the ball, look at the injuries over there and what it's going to mean as well. Remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can improve your performance and have that extra confidence.
Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom.
Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package with no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code MLB. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code MLB to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. So on the other side, Frank did go out, came back in, right? In his stead, we saw Reggie Ragland get a few snaps. And actually produce some pressure, which I'm not even going to ask you about right now because nobody wants to hear me talk about Reggie anymore. But it could be a factor down the line, even if Frank's available. We're still talking about Alex Okafor maybe not being 100%, as well as Chris Jones. Your take on Naughty, Saunders, Williams, who might be available and who might have to play again?
Yeah, Naughty is probably the, or excuse me, Williams is probably the other big question mark on that line with the injuries. That one might be a little bit more severe. We'll see how the results come out. But from the way people were talking, it certainly seemed that that was the one that, outside of Jones on the defensive side, I think they had the most concern with being a long-term deal. What I thought was really interesting, the way that they did approach it, is that when Hitchens went down, it wasn't Damian Wilson and it wasn't Darren Lee that came in and took those snaps. It was Ben Neiman. He played every single snap after Anthony Hitchens went down. And I think that was a bit of a surprise. I mean, there were times that with them trying to figure out how to stop the Colts on the ground, they had some dime looks out there where Ben Neiman was the only linebacker on the field. You had Dan Sorensen out there kind of in a linebacker role. I mean, it was really kind of a dime safety linebacker type spot. He was the only guy out there, and it wasn't for injuries. I mean, it was purely just trying to figure out the best scheme to try and slow down the Colts. On the line, yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, you got to think that if, and this probably is what limits the possibility of maybe looking into Jeff Allen, is that I think you probably have to look at bringing up a defensive lineman. I mean, that could mean Joey Ivey coming back from the practice squad this week if they feel like they need numbers. And you might very well need that because, once again, we get to the fact that you're playing two games, quick succession. One of them is at altitude where you're going to need a lot of defensive line help. So that may be the bigger need right now for reinforcements is on the defensive line than anywhere else.
And that rotation is certainly I thought that they held their own. I thought Saunders, for being a guy that no one expected to play, I thought he did all right. I won't say he played well. But he was certainly more stout against the run than I thought he would be. Frank Clark talked about stopping the run. Tyrann Mathieu talked about stopping the run. And there's been a whole lot of debate lately. I'm not going to get into that today, folks. Believe me, Seth and I are going to fight on Thursday. Just hold your breath. We'll get to it. But clearly,
I cannot wait, by the way, to hear the discussion and what happens to Seth's brain when he tries to wrap his arms around the idea that an NFL team in 2019 won a game running the ball 45 times.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. I should put it on video. But it, clearly that's what the defenders on this team are worried about. We heard them all speak about it. Now, I know that there's a two-pronged effect. You have to not only run the ball, but you have to play good defense. And they did both of those things. But do you feel after, and I like the question that you asked Frank last night in particular, and it looked like he had to take a step back and be really thoughtful about it. And I think that takes a lot. But do you think this roster has it in them to actually get it turned around and be able to stop the run?
I mean, I think so, because you're seeing the leaders of this team kind of rise, and we've seen it since training camp. It's tough for new players to come in and immediately take over as a leadership role, especially I think even in the locker room where there's been as much turnover on the defense. I mean, these guys are still getting to know each other, and that kind of even ties in with what, you know, Andy Reid told me today when I asked him about the run defense, is that he still thinks it's time, you know, time for these guys to play together. And I think there's also time that's involved with guys like Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark stepping forward and being the leaders on this team. You know, Mathieu, and talking to him last night about the run defense, he's not to the point yet where, and I would never expect a player like him to call out players individually, but he started teetering the line and calling out the defense's overall attitude, because he said, you know, the run defense problems are not scheme. They're not coaching. It's attitude. And when you say that, I mean, you're leaving the suggestion that says that this team doesn't have the right attitude right now to play the run successfully. And that means at some point they're going to have to start challenging each other to do that. Now, you know, Andy Reid will tell you, as he said on Monday, that, you know, it's the run defense to him is pure gap responsibility. And that's what that they don't have right now. They've got guys maybe who are trying to do too much, make too many plays. There's certainly tackling issues. I don't know how you fix that in the middle of a season, but they've got them. It's hard to say. I mean, and the only reason I think that you have to worry is that you heard a lot of the same lines after the game last night that you've heard the last couple of years when the Chiefs couldn't stop the run. And that gets, I think, concerning, because the last couple of Chiefs teams never figured out how to stop the run. If this team doesn't figure it out, you know, I had in my article from, you know, the game on Sunday, you know, there's only been one team in the 16 game era of the NFL that gave up more yards per game than the Chiefs are giving up and made the playoffs. Now, the good news for the Chiefs is that that one team was 2006 Colts, who won the Super Bowl. But you just don't give up this many yards and make the playoffs. And this team, I think, is going to make the playoffs. But if they don't figure it out, I mean, it really does concern you, because at some point you're going to have to stop the run. Doesn't mean you're going to have to do it every single week. You're going to have to do it at some point.
Well, and like they said, teams are going to do this until you prove that you can stop it. That's the way this league works. And I like that you brought up the fact that it's carrying over, because they've switched out the coordinator. They've switched out the scheme. They've switched out the linebackers. They've switched out the front. So there's nothing left to change. The only thing this comes back to is, again, preparation, attitude, and focus that comes from the head coach, not from the defensive side of the ball. And that's where, after watching last night, seeing guys pull up, seeing guys not jump on a pile and relying on the guy who made first contact to bring somebody down, it just doesn't seem like that attitude is there.
Yeah, and you know, and we've talked about, you know, how Andy Reid structures his staff, and I don't know. We don't know. We haven't been inside of it. I certainly haven't been inside of it to know just how much he delegates. But you know, there's a perception a lot of times that, you know, Andy Reid's the coach of the offense and his defensive coordinator's the coach of the defense. Now, I do know for a fact that there are times that Andy Reid steps in. And we saw that in week three. I mean, we saw that, you know, the players on both the offensive and defensive lines said, yeah, Andy Reid challenged them that week, because it was right after they got really pushed around by the Raiders. He came in and said, not going to happen, challenged them to fix it. And they did. I mean, they won the game. They were much more effective, I thought, on the offensive side than the defensive side, but they won the game. They got the stops when they needed them. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, it does come from the top. So, you know, at some point, yeah, I mean, I do think Andy Reid's going to have to challenge this defense and say, what's going on here? I mean, because you've got to have the attitude to make plays, to make stops, and right now they don't have it.
Well, we're going to talk about how they can get there. We'll come back in a second, folks, and dig into the details of moving forward, trying to live on after this game.
If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or would you keep walking? Of course, you take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay you when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Do the smart thing if you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid.
And man, I made that sound very dramatic, living on, they're going to be just fine. It's a single game. My big problem is this team gave up 19 points and lost. That's the problem. Yes, the defense is horrendous against the run. Yes, they're over-pursuing. Yes, they're trying to do somebody else's job. And there are all kinds of issues with that part. But they still only gave up less than 20 points, and this offense wasn't able to do it. And I like what you said earlier about Coach Reed challenging the fronts, because that's where it all comes down to. The defensive line and the offensive line are what lost this game, in my opinion. I don't know if you feel that strongly or if you just think it's a factor, but can simply refocusing those two units get them over the hump and back on the road to being able to dominate teams?
Well, that's where it's going to start. I mean, it really is, because you look at it, and with the Colts, it didn't feel like they were giving up as many explosive plays on the ground as they had been, which was what Steve Spagnuolo's complaint was, that they were just giving up too many chunk yardage plays. They had a few. I mean, they gave up Mac had the big 30-yard run. But after that, I mean, you know, most of their big chunk plays came in the passing game. Had a few big runs from Mac here and there, but by and large, I mean, it was just a case that Colts were able to get 4 yards anytime they wanted it. They just went straight up the middle and pushed guys around, and you got that 4 yard push, and that starts up front. I mean, that starts at the defensive line. So, and it's both sides. When you get manhandled in the run as much as the Chiefs did, it's both sides. And injuries are certainly a factor. There's no doubt about that. Injuries are a huge factor in what's going on right now. But at the same time, I mean, the guys that are in there have to step up. And right now, you're not seeing it. And we even saw that, you know, on some of the chunk plays that they did get, wasn't defensive line. I mean, it was the linebackers and corners not making plays too. So it became infectious at some point. If they're going to turn it around, they've got to start it. To me, it starts in, you know, up front with the bigs across the board. And if they can get that defensive line to start crashing down against the run and making some plays, it should spread to the other guys too, because they've got the guys to make the plays. They've got a strong secondary that I think can play the run pretty well. Tyrann Mathieu is a great run defender. You saw it again. I mean, he had a couple of really nice plays last night. It looked like, you know, they could have been game breakers. But you got to have more. And if one guy is not making a play, it seems like it's spreading to other guys, and all of a sudden nobody's making a play.
And that's what it comes down to. I thought we did see a couple of positive things. Starting on the defense, it was Tyrann Mathieu finally got his hands on a ball, made that nice tackle for loss, instinctual play, the things that we kind of expected from him. The other thing that I had to take away is I know they didn't want to play Mo Claiborne a lot. I think he did play more than they had planned, but not by a ton, right? And I did feel like when he then went back out of the game and Ward came back in, it felt like Ward had been pushed a little bit. I thought he played better after Mo's reps than before. What was your takeaway?
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing. I mean, he had a couple of really nice breakups after Claiborne had gotten a couple of series, and he seemed, you know, really fired up on a couple of those plays too. I think they got exactly what they, you know, wanted out of Claiborne last night. They wanted to get him out there for a couple of series. Wanted to get him about 20 snaps. He played 24. So, you know, they accomplished what they wanted to do. Now the question is going to be, what's the next step? I mean, is this just, you know, step one in moving Claiborne into the lineup and replacing Ward? Or, you know, is this just the kind of kick that maybe Ward needs to take it up a notch? And if that's the case, I mean, if Claiborne plays well and Ward still holds him off, that's a good problem to have.
Absolutely. And that's I don't see that happening personally. I think Claiborne takes it over. But here's my thing is that this team wants to play more zone. I think Claiborne's better at that. But here's the other aspect that they have to pull that off. Playing zone should get you more pass breakups and more turnovers. That's not doing it so far. So there's got to be something to turn that up a notch as well. And I'm curious to see what you think of all the penalties on Breland and the missed tackles, two of them by Juan Thornhill.
Yeah, that was a really rough night. And one of the penalties on Breland was maybe a little tic-tac. The others were not.
But you said, I mean, okay.
there was one. I'll give him one. Was a little bit of a tic-tac, but the others were, he earned those. He got his money worth on those. And those were big. I mean, the pass interference, I did not think that Ward committed pass interference. I thought he actually had pretty good coverage on that play. And I'm just not sure if Breland realized how good a coverage that Ward had and felt like he just needed to stop the touchdown.
Just a panic move.
It seemed like a panic move. Exactly. And the penalties across the board defensively were a problem. But, you know, Breland had a really rough night. I think you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. Five games, he's really only had one rough game. Hey, 80% is better than this team's had at times at the corner the last couple of years. So I think they'll take it. But he's got to put that game behind him and move on. Thornhill, you're going to see some growing pains. He's had him. He's had some moments where he looks, you know, really in control out there. And every once in a while, he looks like a rookie. That's going to happen. That's going to be expected.
On the other side of the ball, a couple of positives. The emergence of Byron Pringle, didn't expect him to play that much, let alone get nine targets, second only to Travis Kelce. Another instance where I think this all comes back to if Pat is healthy, Patrick Mahomes makes this passing game. It's the opportunity for him to throw you something that no one is even trying to cover any longer.
Yeah. And, you know, and you go back to talking about earlier and about, you know, this team gives up 19 points and, you know, the last couple of years when they do that, they win. And this time they don't. And let's be realistic. I mean, a big part of it is because you play this game essentially without Sammy Watkins and you play without Tyreek Hill. Pringle stepping in was huge. I mean, that was impressive for a guy who was not necessarily planning on being a part of the game plan and then essentially steps in and replaces Sammy Watkins. Six catches, 103 yards, his touchdown is really impressive. And he just looked comfortable out there. He did all the right things. I mean, even on that touchdown, I mean, he did exactly what he's supposed to do, which is run around, find the spot, and wait for Mahomes to find you. And he did exactly that. So I think he got some encouragement. I mean, even Hardman with the, you know, four catches for 79 yards, I think was a really quiet, you know, impressive thing to see. I mean, has been the kind of next step with Hardman, that it's not just the deep balls, that he can find a way to make his presence known in, you know, more pedestrian ways. And you saw that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's any, I mean, to me, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, I think the Chiefs get the plays that they need made if they have either Tyreek Hill or Sammy Watkins. You just can't, it's any offense without a two top wide receivers is going to struggle.
Well, and I'll tell you this, I thought both the young guys made that over the shoulder catch on the sideline for Hardman was gorgeous, I thought. But both of them show one common thing that I think young players often have, and maybe exacerbated by the rest of this receiving group, is they both are comfortable taking steps back in order to try to go forward. Robinson did it last night. Pringle cost himself a first down. He could have been a big hero right there, and that was important. But Hardman's done it as well. Those are other things that don't happen if you have Hill and Watkins. And I think going forward, as teams try to use this, and they're all going back to New England's blueprint of playing tough man, the two guys that can consistently get off of man coverage are Hill and Watkins. And if you get one, great. If you get them both, I think they're back in business.
And I thought that was just incredibly fascinating from Mahomes on Sunday night, because he doesn't usually give too much away. I mean, and when he does give things away, it's usually because of things they've been successful at. He doesn't usually get as detailed as he was about some of the struggles Sunday night, where he specifically says, look, hey, this is third game that we've had, we're going back to Patriots, going to the Lions, going to now, where we have faced man coverage, pressing up at the line, and our guys haven't been able to get off of it, haven't been able to beat it. We got to figure that out. That's more direct than I remember seeing, you know, Patrick Mahomes at any point in his career. I thought that was fairly interesting. And Reed followed up with it on Monday too. I mean, and it underscored it. Yeah, this team has got to figure that out. And And you're right. The two guys that they've got to make a difference are Hill and Watkins. But, you know, Hill struggling against the Patriots, and what they did to him was part of the reason why they lost that game, too. So it's across the board. I mean, as they've got to figure out how to handle it when teams play them that physically and try to muddle things up, because you're right. I mean, that's the new game plan for how you beat the Chiefs is you play man, you press the receivers, you get your hands on them as much as they can, and then you just run the ball down their throat.
I think the big takeaway for teams around the league is that this whole team on both sides of the ball is a finesse team right now. They won't get in the pit and fight you, and that's the problem. But like you said, the last person that I think concerns me about putting it on film, what happened to him, Travis Kelce's been beat up the last couple of weeks. They are attacking him physically, and he's letting it get to him. Is that going to be a problem going forward? Are he and Bienemy okay?
All indications are. I mean, you know, in the past, you know, Kelce has had some of these dust ups with coaches in the past, and it's always been something that goes water under the bridge. I mean, that's typical, and I don't think it's a surprise that maybe Eric Bieniemy is a coach that it happens with, because Bieniemy is a tough nosed guy. I mean, he's not afraid to get in your face and tell you what you did wrong, and you know, and if Kelce was kind of already in his head, and Bieniemy says something, that's not unusual for Kelce for that to affect him. But it doesn't normally last long term. I mean, yeah, you've got to at this point in his career play with a little bit more in control. He had a really bad stretch there. The encouraging thing to me is that as bad as the first quarter that Kelce had, after he had that little dust up with Bieniemy, they went right back to him. He caught two quick passes. They come down, get the score. So, you know, there were some positives out of it, but you're right. I mean, those kinds of things, they can affect everybody. I mean, you see your superstar tight end shoving your offensive coordinator on the sideline. It's natural to just go, whoa. What are we doing here, guys?
Right. I'm very intrigued about that. And I will say this, of the two of them, next time I'm at Power and Light and I'm about to get in a fight, I'm going to call Eric Bieniemy, not Travis Kelce, to help me. And we're both going to hide behind you. So I appreciate you being there.
Hey, the save of the day, give it to Cam Irving for stepping in there and grabbing Bieniemy and saying, okay, we're cool.
Yeah, and tell him not to try to kill Darrell Williams on the sideline next time either. But we'll talk about Cam next time. Folks, make sure you hit everything in Chiefs Digest, because Matt's putting in the work over there. Chris is helping him out as well, and you know, someday I'll do something worth reading, but let's not hold our breath. So, Matt, love to get back with you later in the week. Don't think it's going to happen given your schedule, but thanks for being with us today.
We'll do our best. Always great talking to you, Ryan.
Folks, thank you for listening. Check out Chiefs Digest, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.